cell phones, please switch it off or put in the mute, please.
Or you can leave them on as long as the music they make matches whatever we're talking about. And that's good. It's May 15th, 2016, Columbus, Ohio. And we're going to be doing just a brief overview of this book, Manushiksha. And we're going to do tomorrow night. Where are we going to be tomorrow night?
Kalindi's.
Kalindi's. And we're going to be at Kalindi's house tomorrow night. What time?
6 o'clock.
And we're going to go through Manushiksha again tomorrow night, but in more depth and detail. Even then, we're not going to go as deeply as we could, because to go as deeply as we could would take about a 30-hour seminar. So we're going to kind of just touch on the main points today, and if you want to go deeper, I have actually a different presentation on Manushiksha I'll be showing tomorrow than this one. So we'll be going tomorrow verse by verse, whereas here we're just touching the main ideas. Is all right? And we do have just a few copies here. We sold out about a fourth of our copies, a little more than a fourth last night at our program. They're also available on Amazon, though a little bit higher price. And the edition that we put together, it has Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prose commentary. It also has the first translation ever of his songs on each of the verses, Bhaktivinoda's songs. In addition, we have commentaries of contemporary Vaishnavas, Sachinanda Maharaj, Jayadwaita Swami, Bhakti Vigyan Swami, Shivaram Maharaj. We have 12 new oil paintings that were done to illustrate the books, and 120 black and white pictures. I think you guys can probably move up a little bit. These poor gentlemen over here can't see a thing. So maybe we can, as long as we're not blocking the beam of light, we can have a few more people maybe up here and try and see. You're making this huge aisle that we probably don't need to have. So, all right. So often we feel in our relationships as if people aren't interacting with our real self, as if the person with whom others are interacting is just a semblance of ourself, some sort of pretense. It's as if when we're trying to deal with the world, ourselves, and others, we're not dealing with things as they are. We're not being authentic with ourselves, with other people, or even with how we act in the world. We may simply feel that we're wearing a series of masks, trying to live up to other people's expectations, right? Dealing with things the way other people think that we should, and so forth. So why is this particular book important? Well, first of all, one of the great saints in our line, one of our acharyas, Bhaktivinoda, who's the father of Srila Prabhupada's guru, he said that this book, Manushiksha, is what's called a padati. Pada means step, hati means progress. It means that this book takes you in step-by-step progress to attain spiritual perfection and enlightenment. And we find often instructions on spirituality are very cursory or very simple. Just believe this and you become perfect. Just pray this and you become perfect. And they don't really detail the inner journey. There's a few persons who've really gotten into what goes on internally as one progresses. And Raghunath Das Goswami is one of them. In addition, this book is very important for our Hare Krishna movement, because it establishes that what we are following in our movement will actually take one to perfection. So first we're going to look in Manushiksha at developing affection and passion. Now this may seem very strange. We have the word raga and rati in the first few verses of Manushiksha, because generally we understand spiritual life and spiritual perfection as detachment and the absent of passion. Right? Passion, we think of, well, that's something very materialistic. Think of those of you familiar with the Bhagavad Gita, the mode of passion. So we'd be giving up all that. We would have vairagya, which means renunciation. And yet, Raghunath Das Goswami is talking about sauraga, having attachment, having passion. And he says this is the start of the spiritual path. So how is that? And that is because it's a very different kind of attachment that Raghunath Das Goswami is telling us to have. And this right at the beginning. Now it's interesting. Can you see from there?
Yeah.
Sort of, kind of? You twist your neck a lot? I think that there's room right here for you. Oh, you're a little tall.
I'll go back there.
Maybe you could switch with some shorter person. Yes. I know you guys are working on, you have a property, you're working on getting a new facility. I can see you really need it. Do we have any room over here for anyone else? You have some room? Some room in the front? There's some room right here in the front if you're not too tall. And there's some room. Okay. So our attachment in this world, our so-called love and our so-called attachment in this world, is generally, not always, but generally more or less self-centered. Generally, it's more or less self-centered. When people are thinking of marrying, they generally think of, how can I find someone who's going to do X, Y, Z for me? Right? Sometimes people tell me, oh, I'd like to get married, I just can't find the right person. And I say to them, why don't you write down what you're looking for and also what you have to offer? And what you have to offer seems to be the real bugaboo for people. What I have to offer? I was just going to get something for myself. People look for a job. They don't generally think of, I mean, of course they present to the interview, what do I have to offer the company? But really what they're thinking of is, what can I get from this job? How much money can I get? How can I advance my career? And the sad truth is that most of our so-called attachments and most of our so-called passions and love are very much self-centered, more or less. More or less. There was a very famous book about the relationships between men and women, how men and women keep score in a relationship, which I thought was fascinating. You know, like if you buy your wife a rose, you get so many points. You know, you cut the lawn, you get so many points, you know. You cook lasagna, and then you get a certain number of points. And how men and women keep score differently, and how you have to kind of keep track of the score, and if it gets uneven, then people become, you know, uncomfortable. So this means that we're calculating on some level what's in it for me. So the kind of attachment we're talking about here is the kind that we romanticize and talk about, but unfortunately very rarely experience. And that is actual love. Actual love, where you really give yourself fully without thinking about yourself in return, without a bunch of conditions. Now, by the way, if you try to give that kind of love while still having a conditioned materialistic mentality, if you try to do it artificially, it won't work if you've ever tried to do that. If you ever said, well, okay, I'm going to love this person unconditionally without expecting anything in return, but you haven't really changed your heart, it doesn't work. And after some time, then you just explode. I knew of a couple divorced after 10 years of marriage. And the man was so confused, he couldn't understand why his wife was divorcing him. He said, we never had an argument in the whole 10 years. He said, I always thought it was a perfect relationship. And actually, she was giving and giving and giving and giving and building up resentments like a volcano or an earthquake, you know. And then one day she exploded. And it was too late to fix it. She exploded with 10 years worth of resentment and bitterness about what she hadn't gotten back. But the kind of love that Raghunath Das Goswami is advising us to start with in spiritual life is something on the basis of actual giving. Something that's not material. Now he gives us a list of where we should reposit this genuine attachment to start our spiritual life. And he starts out with our teachers. Especially those who teach us spiritually. Those who teach us about God, about the self, about the purpose of life. Now whether these are people who formally initiate us, we formally become their disciples, or they give us good instructions, or they're helpers on the path, we should approach them with genuine affection. Not just, oh, you're a saintly person, but you are my friend. You are my well-wisher. And this would include anyone who teaches us. It says the ocean teaches us, because in spite of steady rain and rivers, it doesn't overflow, it doesn't become disturbed. The bee teaches us that if we hoard wealth, somebody will steal it. The fish teaches us that if we're greedy, we're going to become captured. So anyone who teaches us in spiritual life, for them we should have affection. We should also have affection, of course, for every living being, but special affection for anyone else who is on the path to love God. Anyone who loves God should love everyone who loves God. I mean, ultimately, anyone who loves God should love anyone who God loves, which is everybody. But we should have especially affection for anyone who is trying to love God, of any tradition. And it's quite interesting that Bhaktivinoda, in his commentary on Manushiksha, speaks about this. One cannot really progress towards spirituality if one thinks, my way of loving God is intrinsically better, and therefore I am better. You know, and we're not talking here just about respect. We're talking here about actual affection and love. One should also have real affection and love for one's prayers and mantras and meditations. So many of us who take up a particular kind of religion or spirituality, we may say certain prayers. Do you want to come in? Oh, you're welcome to come in just for a couple minutes if you want. Many times that we have certain prayers and mantras that we're saying, they can become ritualistic. Okay? They become ritualistic. We just memorize something. Oh, what does it mean? Oh, I don't know. It's just some words I'm saying, especially if we're saying prayers in a language that's not our native language. I had a really interesting experience one time in India. I was in Bengal, and there were these Bengalis who were singing the prayers of our saint and our line, Bhaktivinoda, who wrote in Bengali. And I thought, wow, for them singing these songs, it would be like me singing in English. When I'm singing the prayers in Bengali, I have to translate them all the time. My Bengali is only about a nursery school level. So, you know, I don't get it done so well. But we should be singing our prayers and our mantras with affection. It shouldn't be a ritual. It shouldn't be something mechanical. It shouldn't be, this is something I do because I'm in this particular religious tradition and that's what we're supposed to do. No. It should be something that comes from the heart. And one should take up genuine spirituality. So here, the example is given that scholars may study religious texts, but just like very ornate spoons don't get to experience the food that they're holding, so in the same way, just studying religion academically will not get you the real taste. And, these are some of the 120 black and white drawings that are in our book, that you'll see some of them in some of the oil paintings also. So also we should have great love for spiritual places. So there's holy places in various parts of the world. These places are called tirthas. Now the word tirtha, anyone know what the word tirtha means? Is our devotee Ramatirtha here? Are you there? Yes, there you are. Do you know what your name means? Do you know what tirtha means?
Tirtha means a holy place.
Yeah, but what is the literal meaning of the word tirtha? Do you know? No, you don't know.
Abode, sacred water, holy water, abode.
Abode, no. What? No. Good guesses. All these are good guesses.
Like Tirtha Yatra.
Yeah, but what does the word mean? What's the literal meaning? Sacred?
Holy water, pilgrimage. Sweet.
Oh, that's nice, but no. It means a crossing place. Like if you have a river and there's a place the river gets narrow and you can cross, or like a pass in the mountains, someplace where you can cross over, a connection. It means a connecting place. So when you go to a tirtha, actually we can connect with the spiritual anywhere because God is everywhere. He's in every atom, he's in our heart. And with the proper vision, with the proper consciousness, you become a tirtha. Wherever you go, people contact you and they cross into another realm. That's what Srila Prabhupada was like, all the great spiritual teachers. Wherever they go, it becomes a path to the spiritual. But there are certain places, particularly, where there's an opening. I mean, you can think of it like an embassy, right? If you know somebody in, France, you can call them today with mobile phones. You can call them from anywhere, right? But there's also a French embassy. And you go into there and you've got a crossing place. Does that make sense to everybody? Mm-hmm. So God is everywhere. You can contact him everywhere if you know the secret. But there's also certain places where there's a link between the spiritual and the material. And when you go to those places, your ability to contact the spiritual is enhanced. Now, not only are those places in certain geographical locations on the globe, but we can also establish those places in our own home or in this building. We've established this building as a temporary tirtha. So certain places on the planet are temporary tirthas, certain are there forever, even when the whole cosmic manifestation is dissolved. But even in our own home, we can have a little shelf, a little piece of furniture, where we set up a sacred place that becomes like a tirtha. And as I said, we can become a walking tirtha if we're always in connection with the divine. Does that make sense to everybody? If I'm always in consciousness, we call this the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, if I'm always in Krishna consciousness, then anyone who contacts me immediately contacts the divine. Make sense to everybody? So I want you to have affection for those places. So if you have a little place for worship in your home, don't make it just something ritualistic. You know, that's dirty, you don't clean it properly, you just don't pass by, or it's just... But have it an object of affection. With this temple, also, don't think, well, this is just a place I can meet my friends and, you know, those of you from India where I can eat the food that I had in my childhood or something like that. You know, but have it be a place where you really have affection. And also in this verse, we're told that we should make some effort in these first few verses of Manushiksha. We shouldn't depend on luck for our spiritual life. We shouldn't just say, well, you know, if I get mercy from God, I'll become enlightened. If I don't, I won't, and I'm just going to go on with my life. But we should make some distinct effort to progress in spiritual life. Right? Because otherwise, if you just say you have love, everybody can say they have love, right? Oh, I love God. And we find this in every tradition. People will come, oh, I love Krishna. Or I love Jesus. I once took a friend to get some surgery at a hospital early in the morning on a Sunday, and there was a Christian preacher, you know, and they're all holding hands, and I love Jesus. But if you say you love somebody, you have to exhibit that in action, correct? Right? If someone says, I love you, and they never do anything for you, it's not very meaningful. So in addition to love, we have to have effort. Now, also in addition to love, the Sanskrit in these first verses of Manushiksha is sada dambam hitva. Dambha means pride. Hitva means to give up. Sada means always. Always give up pride. Giving up pride is also an essential part of love. So I give this example all the time. So you have $20, you go to Target, and you buy something, and you find that it's worth $20. How do you feel? Okay. So you take $20, you go to Target, you buy something, and you find out it's being sold for $5 at Walmart. How do you feel? Okay, you go to Target, you have your $20, you buy something, and you find out it's worth $100. How do you feel?
Excellent.
Wonderful. So our feelings of happiness are in direct inverse proportion to our feelings of deservedness. The more we think we deserve something, the less we enjoy it. If we really think we deserve something, we're not even aware that it's there. What to speak of getting any pleasure from it. You know, so if the husband comes home and his wife's made a 40-course dinner and the whole house is sparkling clean and she's dressed in beautiful clothes with perfume, but he thinks, well, of course she's my wife, she's supposed to do that. Then, you know, there won't be any kind of enjoyment. You follow? Does that all make sense? And we all know what it feels like to be taken for granted by someone who thinks that they deserve. So without humility, there's no question of spiritual life. So we have love, love for our teachers, love for sacred places, love for our chanting, love for our prayers, actual effort in spiritual life, and humility. So these are all the beginning qualifications to start on the spiritual path. Okay, you ready now actually to go on the path? Are you ready?
Yes.
Everybody ready? All right, I'm going to tell you, if someone had told me this when I first came to the Hare Krishna temple, I don't know if I would have stayed. So I'm not quite sure if I should tell people this or not. At the same time, there's a part of me that kind of wished that I was warned. So when you take up spiritual life, you're going to go deeper and deeper and deeper into being an authentic person, which means you're going to get rid of the stuff that's not authentic. Now that sounds lovely, but the process of it is not always lovely if we're attached to our pretense. Okay? Does that make sense to everybody? So Manashiksha, Raghunath Das Goswami takes us from gross to subtle, and we're really just touching on it today. As I said, we'll go more into depth tomorrow. We do have the book if you want to get into further study. But this is deep stuff. We worked 3 years in producing this book, and it wasn't the kind of thing that you would read in a night like a novel. You know, you read a little bit, you go, oh, whoa, okay, let's do that. And then it's like, whoa, that's wonderful. So it was kind of this sort of like a medical treatment for a disease you didn't know you had. And then you feel great afterwards. You're like, wow, I had no idea I could feel this way. I just warn you. Okay, if any of you want to leave right now before we start going deeper into this, you know, that's okay. Okay, so the first level of getting rid of pretense and becoming authentic is what we talk about. What we talk about. Sound. So what we talk about is a barometer to our current state of consciousness. Now, you can't sit right in front of there, dear. Because although you have gorgeous hair, I don't think we really want it just right here on the screen. Yeah, there's enough room here, but not right there. Yeah, okay. Okay, so this is really a barometer. If you want to know, if you say, you know, well, I have love for God, and I really love the spiritual process, and I'm making some effort, and I even have some humility and so forth. First step, listen to what you talk about. Listen to what you talk about. Do you talk about spiritual things? Frankly, most people are talking about, you know, what they did all day, their family, or criticizing other people. It's a big pastime of people, right? Criticism. And, you know, we like to criticize everybody and anybody, especially anybody who's wealthier or more famous or whatever than we are. So that there's a whole industry of, you know, criticism of the materially accomplished persons, which is based, by the way, on, anyway, what that's coming from. So do we just criticize others? Do we self-glorify? There's all kinds of ways of self-glorification that we engage in our speech, some direct, some indirect. Or do I just talk about the things of the world, you know, politics and sports and movie stars? Of course, we have to talk a little bit about the things in our life, naturally, you know, did you remember to buy the milk today or whatever. But our main speech should be that which will bring us to the spiritual. And of course, Krishna talks about this in the Bhagavad Gita, where he says, Natchitam agita pranam, bodhiyantas prasparam, katayantastimam nityam, tushanti charamanticha. That people gain great satisfaction and happiness from getting together with other spiritual practitioners and speaking about Krishna, speaking about things that are transcendental. So what do we talk about? It shows who we are right now, and it also creates who we are. So how was this whole material world created? Sound. Yes? It says that in the Bible, in the beginning was the Word, and it says in our Vedic scriptures, what was the original sound? Oh. Oh, well, they were there yesterday, so you studied in depth. Very nice. So even the scientists say that there's no such thing really as solid matter. This solid matter is made up of atoms, and within the atoms, the electrons are moving. Whenever there's movement, there must be sound. Everything is coming from sound. And we are creating our future with sound. So Krishna says, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam twajat jante kalevaram tam tam egaitikanteya sarata bhava bhavitaha. Where we go at the time of death depends on our mentality. And what do we mean by our mentality? We mean our thoughts. Well, what are our thoughts made out of? Sounds. They're subtle sounds, but they're sounds. And so our sounds indicate who we really are. I love, I love, I love, I'm humble, but who am I really is shown by what I talk about, and who I will become is shown by what I talk about. Now, Raghunath Das Goswami has some pretty heavy metaphors in this book, Manashiksha. And the first one is, he says, talking about mundane things is like a prostitute. So such persons, they look beautiful, maybe, and they're promising pleasure and love, but do they deliver? Is that what they deliver? No. What do they really want?
money.
Just your money. Do they really love their customers? No, they have contempt for their customers. They simply want to take their wealth. And how many people have had their wealth, their family, their reputation, their position stolen by consorting with one of these? So this is like mundane talk. It looks, go up, be very nice, talk about this thing, talk about that thing, talk directly or indirectly about how wonderful I am. And then our real wealth, which is our inclination for the spiritual, becomes finished. Now, interestingly enough, Raghunath Das Goswami also says, don't talk about liberation and salvation. He said, that's like a tigress who's going to eat yourself. Isn't that what spirituality is, liberation and salvation? Well, yes, but it's really a byproduct of genuine spirituality. When you love God, when you find your real self, naturally, you're liberated from ignorance and fear and illusion. However, simply wanting to be liberated, separate from love of God, destroys who we really are. Not that it can destroy it actually, but it's like that. Why? Because love isn't about being bound to someone. Right? If you go home to your spouse and say, okay, you're free to go. Would that be very pleasing? I mean, maybe if they don't like you, but in a happy marriage. It wouldn't be very pleasing. So if we're meditating on simply, I want to be free, you know, my back hurts, I don't have enough money in the bank, I don't like my mother-in-law, I don't like my job, I wish I would just have salvation. You know, that's not the mood of developing love of God. The mood of developing love of God is, my dear Lord, I want to be bound to you eternally in loving service. So meditating just on liberation and talking about liberation. Oh, the world's a miserable place, you know, and it's the Iron Age of Quarrel, Kali Yuga, and I wish I could just get out of here, and when am I going to go back to the spiritual realm? That's like a tiger. And some people have pet tigers, yes? For people have pet tigers? Nice tiger. And then one day they don't show up at work because?
They got eaten.
Raghunath Das Goswami says, also don't worship the Lord wanting to enjoy his opulences. He says, don't worship Lakshmipati. Lakshmipati, Lakshmi means all the opulences. Wealth, fame, beauty, knowledge, renunciation, strength. The Lord is the master of all these opulences. Just like I have a friend who says, I like having very rich friends because they can take me on their yacht with them. So don't worship God because you want to go on his yacht with him. Worship God simply to love him. And how do we get free of the prostitute of mundane talk, the tigress of the talk of liberation, and wanting to enjoy the opulences of God? Raghunath Das Goswami says we have to get a jewel. And this jewel is the sweet, sweet love of the residents of the ultimate spiritual world, Vrindavan, where everyone is giving themselves to the Lord and the Lord is giving himself to them without consideration that he is the Lord, just in sweetness. All right, so let's say we've taken care of what we talk about and we're talking about the spiritual. Then we're going to go a little deeper into what we do. What we do. So Raghunath Das Goswami says, don't be attached to being a good person in the world, and don't be attached to being a bad person. Krishna talks about three kinds of activities, karma, vikarma, and akarma. Karma is, I'm going to be a good person in the world, I'm going to pay my taxes, take care of my family, I'm going to earn my way to heaven. So that's not the mood of love. And being a bad person in the world is, I'm going to cheat on my taxes. I'm going to just use the photocopier at work for my own purposes. And no one's going to find out. So that will not help us attain to love of God. Rather, we should do akarma, which is spiritual activities. Both karma and vikarma establish us in the web of action and reaction. Akarma is when I simply work for the pleasure of the Lord. Of course, when we work for the pleasure of the Lord, we are being good in the estimate of the world. The world will look at us and say, oh, you're a good person. But we're not being a good person to be a good person. We're being a good person simply to please the Lord. So at this level, Raghunath Das Goswami says, all right, you may be talking about the spiritual, but what are you doing? What are you doing? And In every religious tradition, we have this problem that great preachers of God may be hypocrites. They preach wonderfully about God, secretly they're doing something else. We've had this problem in our society, in every religious organization, you have this kind of problem. And Raghunath Das Goswami, this says, because on the shining path of love, there are some robbers. So we don't have these kind of robbers much in America anymore, highwaymen, we used to. And have you been to South Africa? No. So in South Africa, they say, be careful at the robots. Be careful at the robots. I was trying to think, figure that one out. Do you have any idea what the robots are in South Africa?
No?
The street lights. The street lights, yes. They said, be careful when you stop at the red light, which they call robots, because people will come with a gun and steal your car. Sometimes they'll shoot you too. So these are the highwaymen. And these are the highwaymen, even those who are speaking about God, they have a rope there. Now who are these guys? And I apologize, my artist decided to depict them all as male. Sorry guys. So who are these guys? Lust, anger, envy, greed, illusion, and madness. And they have ropes made of wicked deeds. These are all the things that we know we shouldn't do, and we do them anyway. And as explained in the Bhagavad Gita, the reason we do things we know are not good for us is simply lust. Lust meaning a desire to satisfy my senses without consideration of the consequence. So these are all the things that we're talking about spirituality at this point. Remember, we're talking about spirituality. We've gotten rid of the prostitute and the tigress. We have this jewel. But we're not acting on it. We're not acting on it. We say, I'm not going to yell at my kids, we yell at our kids. We say, I'm not going to watch that stuff, we watch it. I'm not going to eat that, we eat it. And it's said that these ropes of wicked deeds, my dear friends, are like a leash around our neck. And this is one reason we need this humility, because it's very difficult to admit that although I have some genuine love for God, and for other saintly persons, and for sacred places, and for my spiritual practices, and although I talk about spiritual things, secretly I am being pulled around the neck like a dog on a leash by my lust, by my anger, by my envy, and by my greed. Now, the solution for this, Raghunath Das Goswami says, is we should remember the crane. So, the crane stands on one leg with eyes closed, like a great meditating yogi, until along comes a
fish,
and then back to the pose. The hypocrite. The hypocrite. So Krishna killed a great wizard who took the shape of a crane. His name was Baka, and he destroyed him. So Raghunath Das Goswami says, to be free of hypocrisy, where we are deceiving others by not walking our talk, we should call out, help! To those devotees of the killer of the crane of deceit. In other words, to those people who themselves are free from hypocrisy. To those people who have the courage and the humility to say, I am being led around like a dog on a leash in spite of my genuine spiritual feelings and talks. And I need help. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, this is one of our oil paintings to the book, he specifically says, call to these people, Arjuna, Bhishma, Narada, those of you familiar with the great Vedic scriptures know about these persons. And they will drive away such persons, they will drive away lust, anger, envy, greed, and illusion. The devotees of the killer of Baka, they will come and release these ropes around our necks. All right, so at this point, we're talking about spiritual things, and now our actions are in line with our words. So come to this point. We're talking about people who are quite spiritually advanced. They have genuine love for God, for other religious people on the path, for saintly places, for their teachers, for their mantras. They make actual endeavor. They have some humility. They talk about spiritual things, and their actions are really good. You would look at their life and say, wow, this is a very spiritual person. But now we come to the point of whether or not we're deceiving ourselves. Here we're learning about our inner motives. While we're chanting and praying, are we really just meditating on wealth? Are we really just meditating on the things of the world? Do we engage in spiritual practices just to impress others? Here's somebody preaching just to impress some young pretty girls. This also happens in every tradition. Right? Who asked this yesterday? You asked this, right? Can I be worshiping God just to impress other people? Instead of taking care of other people to impress God? Remember I told you I was going to talk about that today? Yeah, we're going to talk about it even more tomorrow. And Raghunath Goswami says, you may have destroyed externally lust, anger, envy, greed from your external behavior. And you may think, I'm doing spiritual life now and I'm getting so clean in my spiritual life. But your shower head may be the rear end of a donkey. And what you're getting cleaned in may be donkey urine. Now, how do you know we're getting cleaned in donkey urine instead of actually getting clean? So someone also asked me this. Who asked me about how do you know? Well, that was you when I was talking about Rajavidya Rajaguya.
Yes.
To you? Yes. Okay. So how do you know you're really trying to please God? Well, this is how you know you're not. Donkey urine, Raghunath Das Goswami says, burns. If you're doing spiritual activities, talking about spiritual activities, but your purposes are different. You're thinking about money, you're thinking about impressing the opposite sex, you're interested in just external rules and regulations, your mind and your heart are not there, and you will feel a burning sensation. You'll feel a burning when other people become genuinely spiritually advanced. In your heart, it will feel just empty, like a burning desert. Or you may feel constant anger or dissatisfaction. This is a sign that one is bathing erroneously in donkey urine, thinking it's a nice bath. The solution, Raghunath Das Goswami says, is to bathe in the ocean of love. We were talking about the symptoms of this. Pavitram idam uttamam pratyaksha bhagavam dharmam susukam kartamam. It's purified. You feel actually purified. You feel refreshed. You gain in knowledge. Your life feels authentic. And you gain in happiness. And what is this ocean of love? It is at the feet. This is one of the oil paintings we have in the book. It's the ocean of love at the feet of Gandharva and Giridhari. Gandharva means the great artistic singer. Giridhari means the holder of a mountain. And this sweet relationship between Krishna, the Supreme Absolute as masculine energetic, and Radha, the Supreme Feminine Energy, exemplifies real love, a relationship of the heart, that when one does one's spiritual life in this mood, simply trying to please Krishna, then one is swimming in this ocean of love. So at this point, we have a jewel of love. Remember the jewel we got to defeat the prostitute and the tigers? And we've been protected by the devotees who are free from hypocrisy. We're on the shining path. We're swimming in an ocean of love. Are we done? Almost. Almost. Yes, that's right. The donkey's urine is deceiving ourselves. It's when we're engaging in spiritual life, but for the wrong purpose. So I said we're just touching it today, unfortunately. Tomorrow we'll go a little deeper, and we'll discuss it more. Because I just had two slides of the symptoms of donkey urine. There's actually many. So I just picked out two representatives. Bhaktivinoda goes through a list of all the different ways you can be bathing in donkey urine. All right, let's say you've taken care of that. You're no longer deceiving yourself. You're doing spiritual life for the right purpose. Not quite done. Now, I should say that these progressive steps are harder and harder to even be able to see. So most people don't even see what they're talking about. They're not even aware of what they're talking about. They're just talking. They're not really aware of what they do and how they're being pulled around by the neck. What to speak of being aware of their inner thoughts and desires while they're doing things. And this is very, very hard to understand. Until you've done the first steps, it's very hard to do this one. So a person's swimming in the ocean of love and they're thinking, wow, I am a spiritual person. Because pretty much they are. They are. They have some genuine love for God and for religious people and for their practices, and they have some humility, and they don't have any ropes around their neck, and they got this jewel, and they're not talking nonsense, and they're doing the right thing for the right purpose, and woo, and they feel like I've got a party going on in my heart. But Raghunath Das Goswami says, look at who's at that party. He says, the food that's being served at that party is a dead dog. So there are people who eat dead dogs. Obviously, you can eat them, but is it a very nice food? Is it a very nice food? You're going to have to move just a little bit, sir. Now, you just moved the wrong way. There you go. Okay, you do have a lovely shaped head, though. I mean, it's nice. So dead dogs, although they're food, are they nourishing, healthy food? Is that a nourishing, healthy thing to eat? Is it? Is it? Anybody want to eat a dead dog? So this dead dog, metaphorically, is fame and honor. Now at this point in the spiritual path, what do you think a person wants to be honored for?
Spirituality.
Because at this point, a person is very spiritually advanced. A person at this point in the path, most people on the planet would say, well, that's a saint. They're doing their spiritual activities. They don't do nonsense things. And they're doing their spiritual activities without thinking about money or without thinking about impressing the opposite sex, getting something in this world. And the desire for that fame is compared to a wild, disloyal woman. Why disloyal? Because if I want fame, if I want honor, then I won't stick around you if you're not honoring me. When you have a long-term relationship with someone, are they always going to honor you? Will they?
No.
Maybe when you're courting, you know. Oh, you're so beautiful. You're so strong. Does that last?
No.
After you're with somebody for a while, they'll say, you know, this is the 10th time you've left your dirty socks on the floor of the kitchen. You know, they're not always going to be praising you. So if you're looking for praise, then you're going to go from one person to another. Everybody follow this? So this woman who represents the desire for fame and honor, she's a disloyal woman. And we see there are some other ladies there called in Sanskrit sadhu prema. Usually we use the word prema, meaning love for God. This is a feminine form, prema. The beautiful, pure ladies of love. They will not enter the heart while dog meat is being served and this other woman is dancing. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his song says she has a boyfriend. Her boyfriend is deceit. When we want to be honored, can we be honest? Can we? No. We're always going to be pretending we're something that we're not in order to be honored. And therefore, Bhaktivinoda says, this desire for honor, which we've shown metaphorically with trophies, I don't know how well you can see it with this projector, it leads to this tree of deceit. And ultimately, if we don't get this lady and her dog out of our heart, the other things can come back. Because this is the root of pretentiousness. So ultimately, we have to get rid of them. Now, how do we get rid of these? We can't get rid of this desire for honor, right, by ourselves. Again, this is the desire for honor that I'm really pure, and I'm really saintly, and I know the scriptures, and I understand the essence of spiritual love, and I'm really sinless, and I'm religious, and, you know, I'm a devotee of Krishna. It's that thing, and the honor for that, that we need to get out. He says you can't get rid of this by yourself. He says you have to cohere not just for the devotees of the Lord, but for the great generals in the Lord's army. And these great generals, they can throw out this desire for honor and prestige along with the boyfriend of deceit out of the heart. We need help with this. Now, why the generals? Why not just any devotee? Because at this point, who do we want to be? We want to be one of the generals. We want to be a saint. Do you understand? I want to be honored for being a saint. So the cure is serve the actual saints. Serve the actual saints. Take the position of humility. Instead of wanting everyone to serve and honor me, let me serve and honor the actual saints. And doing that is so relishable, it's so pleasurable, it's so satisfying, because it's real. That then this desire leaves the heart, and then the beautiful ladies of love, this is also one of our oil paintings, the beautiful ladies of love enter the heart. Now, wouldn't you rather have these people in your heart? And they prepare our heart to receive the Lord. So this is the end of the heavy stuff. We're finished. Made it. Past the really heavy stuff. And now we come to the steps in perfection. So here, one has gained true humility. And we are now in verse 8 in Manushiksha. Here, the person says, "My Lord, I am wretched. I am a cheater. I'm dirty. And before this was like, I'm great. I'm a saint. And here I'm a wretched cheater, but your mercy. Your mercy. You can grow a flower in my dirt. You can make something of me. You can purify me." And the devotee here says, "Please drive away my pretense and cheating by your mercy. And please fill me up with glowing nectar." So before we had a jewel of love and swimming in an ocean of love, but those are both external. And here this glowing nectar is internal. And as we progress in spirituality, we have not just one nectar, but five. So these are the five nectars that Raghunath Das Goswami says we should drink every day. Worship, glorification, meditation, hearing divine pastimes or stories, and offering obeisances. Worship, glorification, meditation, hearing divine stories, and offering obeisances. Can you say it with me? Worship, glorification, meditation, divine stories, and obeisances. Oh, okay. What was that again?
Worship, glorification, meditation, divine stories. Let's try it one more time.
You get that right?
Yes.
Anujinam, he says, every day. Every day. And not as a ritual, as drinking five nectars. And in the ultimate state of perfection, these are some of the paintings that we had made, we enter into the spiritual world. And our artist painted this, he called it "Come With Me." So this is the Lord inviting us to partake in his eternal pastimes. And for those of you familiar, so in this painting we have the chief devotees in each of the primary rasas. Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya. So this is the picture of the spiritual world where there is a great feeling of love between the Lord and his devotees. And Raghunath Das Goswami says, anyone who sings these verses, this Manushiksha every day, who sings it, and that we'll be doing tomorrow, anyone who sings these verses in a sweet voice, trying to understand their meaning, will get the jewel of love of God. And here we see, he said, Krishna likes to wear earrings like dolphins or sharks, to dream of love of God. So this is our very brief, very, very brief meditation on Manushiksha. We have gone to 12:25. Of course, we didn't start exactly 11:30. So do we have time for questions, or did we use up all of our question time?
I think we can take one more question.
Just till what time do we have to end?
About 10 more minutes.
10 minutes, okay. So anybody has any questions? Questions, comments? Yes?
So, to call that help, so how are you
going to
go to, like, Krishna, please help me, or
the Vishnu
Master, or
what is the Vishnu Master? Okay, well, Raghunath Das Goswami says, She said that lust, anger, envy, greed can attack even the devotees. What should we do? Should we call to Krishna for help? So Raghunath Das Goswami said, instead of calling to Krishna, call for Krishna's devotees to help you. And especially call for the devotees. Let's see if I can do this on my phone. Sometimes this works really well, and sometimes it doesn't. So he says to call for the devotees of the killer of Baka. the crane of deceit, but to call for the devotees. So the great devotees, they will come. They will cut these nooses around our necks. So why do we go for the devotees rather than to God himself? Any thoughts as to why the way we get free from lust, anger, envy, greed is that the devotees of the killer of deceit are the ones who free us?
Otherwise we could deceive ourselves that God freed us.
We could deceive ourselves. Oh, I like that. When you deal with the devotees who are themselves free from hypocrisy, they're going to know if you really do it or not, aren't they? And we do that by following their instructions, by their example. By the way, becoming each of these steps requires a lot of courage. It requires the absence of fear. It requires courage just to say, I've got a rope around my neck. And I'm being dragged around like a dog. That requires courage and humility. And just even to cry for help, to say, I need help. That requires a lot of courage and humility. Mostly we just say, well, I don't need any help. You know, I got it all together. I'll take care of it myself, right? So we go to those who've already done that. They've already given up their hypocrisy. We inspired by their example, by their teachings, and because they've done it, they can tell us step by step how to do it. Does that make sense? Yes?
What kind of fear is an absence of God?
What are we afraid of?
To be connected with God. What kind of fear?
What kind of, we have a fear of letting go of our false identity. We have a false identity in this world that I am the master and the controller. I've organized my life. I have everything all together. I know what I'm doing. And, you know, I'm the master of the world. And it's just not true, is it? But we're afraid to give that up. We're afraid if I give that up, then I'll have this low self-esteem. People will take advantage of me. I'll just have this miserable life. But I have to pretend that I've really got it together. You know, I got my degrees, and I've got my experience, and I've got my friends and family and all my connections and all my talents, right? And my physical health or whatever I have, my money. And with all those things, I'm going to be the master of the world. Or at least my room, my house, my life, you know, something. My family, I'm going to be the master. And if we want to love God, we can't think that way, because it's just a bunch of nonsense. It's not true. He's the master, I'm not the master. But we're afraid to give that up. Even though it's an illusion, it's just not at all true. Anybody here can completely control their life? Even in the next 5 minutes? So we're afraid. We're deeply afraid of becoming authentic. We want it, desperately. We want an authentic, loving relationship with the Lord and with all other living beings. That's what we want more than anything else. And we're also terrified of that, because then, gosh golly, I've got to be honest too. And then we just think that that would be the most painful thing in the world instead of the most wonderful thing in the world. Yes?
The great generals are very rare, so how often can we call them?
Good question. The great generals in the Lord's army are very rare. How often can we call on them? Well, they don't have to be physically present, first of all. One nice thing about getting in touch with a genuine chain, a genuine school of spirituality, is especially once you're officially enrolled in that school, just like if you officially enroll, OSU, right? If you enroll in OSU, then you get your little ID card, yes? And then you have full access to the library, to the whatever, the gym, the pool. And all the professors in OSU will help you. I mean, maybe some of them are nasty, but in general, at least in theory, if you're a properly enrolled student, then it's not just the professors in your classes that will help you. But everybody will help me. I mean, when I was in, you know, getting my degree in the School of Education, and I was doing my dissertation, we had to use statistics. So I had to go over to the math department. It was a different school in the university. Completely different school, completely different department. But because I was a properly enrolled student, the professor said, sure, we'll make an appointment and I'll help you. So when you're actually enrolled in a particular school, particularly called in Sanskrit as Sampradaya, then all of the saintly persons in that school are available to help you, even if they're no longer physically present on this planet. They're all of it. All the resources are available to you. And you can call for the help of any of them. And many of them are available through their instructions, but they're also available through divine intervention. Please don't think that they're not. They are. The world is not just the visible world. Available to our gross senses in an illusion state. There's a lot more to the world than that. Anybody else? Yes.
So, since I also have many ropes around me too, so after practicing for some time, so now you're hearing this one, sometimes we feel that, is there any hope for me left?
Is there any hope? Definitely!
Because I've done so many things, now I've come to where I've done something, start from scratch again, undo a lot of things.
No, you don't have to start from scratch. You don't have to start from scratch. You just have to want the truth. Basically, you just have to want to be authentic and have the courage to do it. You have to be willing to jump. That's really what it is. You have to be willing. I'm willing, my dear Lord, to face the truth about myself, and I'm willing to deal with it with courage. And if we have that mood, we don't have to worry that the Lord is going to like really shame us and embarrass us. I mean, that's only when we're just... That's only when we're both praying for purification and resisting it tooth and nail that he does that as a last resort. But generally, he works with us very privately and very sweetly in the heart. If we have that mood. And then there's great hope for all of us, and actually our progress can be very swift. I think I have to stop now. We will be having another class tomorrow night at Kalindi's, right? Mm. At Kalindi's, and who is Kalindi? You are Kalindi. Oh, very good. So if any of you don't know how to get to Kalindi's house, raise your hand so they can see you. There she is, right there. Where's your husband? Yeah. There you go, all right. So what's your name again?
Urukrama.
Urukrama. I know, I've seen you many times before. So Kalindi and Urukrama. So at their house, if you don't know how to get there, you can ask them, and I'll let you know how to get there. And we'll be going into more depth tonight. We also have...